The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, fun and trivia on It Pays to Be Ignorant game show from 1945. We'll also hear an episode of Cecil and Sally starring Ellen Troy and Johnny Patrick, and The Adventures of Danny Marsden from 1948. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Cecil and Sally go window shopping, and The Adventures of Danny Marsden from 1948. Right now, Tom Howard moderates It Pays to Be Ignorant from 1945, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Is a detour.
The roughest distance between two points.
Correct. Pay that man $8. What is a miser?
A man who eats mice.
Correct. Pay that man $9 because...
It pays to be ignorant.
To all you servicemen and women listening in over there, that it does pay to be ignorant, here's another half hour with radio's biggest collection of zanies, the incomparable wits, George Shelton, Lulu McConnell, and Harry McNaughton, our doctor of music, Nat Novick, and the man who sticks his neck out every week at this time, our moderator, Tom Howard.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From Camp Kilmer, New Brunswick, New Jersey, we bring you that quiz program that is the last word in stupidity. We have a board of experts. We have a board of experts who are so dumb they think an officer's mess is a captain's wife. First, First, we have to celebrate author Mr. Harry McNaughton, who has just written a book entitled How to Get a 10-Day Pass or You Should Live So Long. Here he is, Mr. Harry McNaughton.
Thank you. I have a poem, Mr. Howard.
I imagine.
Mary tore her little skirt. The tear was rather wide. She said it was an accident. We all saw Mary's side.
I see.
Very nice.
Okay. Next, we have a woman who, when she arrived here today, one of the boys said, look, fellas, a new type tank. A woman who went to the camp barbershop to have her hair cut. Now we call her Baldy. Here she is, Miss Lulu McConnell.
Isn't this a great place, Mr. Howard?
Yes, indeed it is.
I never in my life saw so many nice-looking boys.
Next, we have a man who was turned down by his local draft board because they couldn't find his head. A man who has got to eat garlic to prove that he's breathing. Here he is, Mr. George Shelton.
Oh, is that so? Well, I'll have you know that I was a dollar-a-year man in the last war. Yeah.
You were a dollar-a-year man in the last war, Mr. Shelton?
Yeah, I was a buck private.
I see. Well, there they are, folks, and I warn you that things won't get any better as we go along. So I won't feel a bit hurt if any of you get up and leave right now. But then again, where are you going to go? Here's the first question. Here's the first question on tonight's program. Let's see if you fellas can answer. Now, pay strict attention. Here it is.
Yeah.
How much beer does a 12-ounce cup hold?
Mr. Howard, would you mind repeating the question?
I'd be glad to. How much beer does a 12-ounce cup hold?
Thank you. Carry on.
Carry on. Oh, that all? Mr. Sheldon, would you know how much beer a 12-ounce cup holds?
4 ounces.
4 ounces? I said a 12-ounce cup.
4 ounces. The other 8 ounces are foam.
I see.
You know, that reminds me. I've got to foam my wife.
Cut that out. Please, the question is how many ounces does a 12-ounce cup hold?
Well, it seems to me that ain't much beer.
Well, Miss McConnell, would you care to say how many ounces a 12-ounce cup holds?
24 ounces.
How can you get 24 ounces in a 12-ounce cup?
Easy. Fill it up twice.
Fill it up twice.
Oh, very good answer, Miss McConnell. Very good, yes.
Oh, I'm smart, I am.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think I went to school for?
I've often wondered.
Oh, well, do I remember my school days. I used to carry the girls' books home.
And sell them.
Yeah, and sell them. Oh, I didn't know. I did not. I remember one day I took my teacher a little apple.
Yes? Did she like the apple?
She sure did. She finished the whole bottle in one slug.
I did.
Well, when I went to school, I always got an A on my report card. And look where I am today. Don't that prove something?
It sure does. It proves you can't go far on an A card. Now, let's get back to the question. How many ounces does a 12-ounce cup of beer hold?
Well, Mr. Howard, tell me, what kind of a cup is it?
What difference does that make? Mm-hmm. Camp Kilmer, I believe they use paper cups.
Paper cups? Well, why don't they use glasses?
No.
They're afraid the guys here are so tough they'd eat the glasses up.
I see.
I went into a place with a soldier last night at 12:05. I ordered a glass of beer, and the soldier ordered a scotch.
Did he drink it straight?
No, he had 2 MPs as a chaser.
Aye.
I was at a party the other night, Mr. Howard, and they served wine. Southern California 28.
Southern California 28? Well, that's a gentleman's drink.
I didn't care. I drank it anyhow.
Thank you, Matt Novick. Now, here's the next question, so stop kidding around and let's try and get one answer.
Yes.
Who wrote Stephen Foster's song, My Old Kentucky Home?
Your old what?
My Old Kentucky Home.
I didn't know that you were from Kentucky.
I'm not from Kentucky.
Well, if you had a home there, you must be from Kentucky.
I didn't say I had a home.
You certainly did. I heard you. I'm not deaf and dumb.
Listen here. Nobody said you were deaf. Now, let's get on. Stephen Foster's song, My Old Kentucky Home.
When I was a little girl, I used to sing that song.
Yeah, when you were a little girl, Stephen Foster wasn't born yet.
Now, wait a minute. How old do you think I am?
Oh, you couldn't be that old.
No.
Well, I'm just around 44.
Must be your second time around. The question is, who wrote Stephen Foster's song, My Old Kentucky Home?
I say, tell me, Miss McConnell, do you know old Black Joe?
Oh, sure.
What's he doing now?
Oh, say, Miss McNaughton, why don't you trade your head in for a booby trap or something?
You know, I remember when I was in vaudeville, I used to be quite a singer myself.
Yeah?
I used to sing, Oh, Bury Me Not in the Lone Prairie.
I bet you had a hard time convincing them not to.
Well, you know, years ago, I used to be quite a singer.
Yeah? What was your best number?
Bryant 99970. Yes.
You know, I think I'll have my voice cultivated.
You should have it plowed under.
Is that so? Well, I'll have you know I have a tremendous obbligato. Uh-huh.
Why don't you get a bigger girdle?
Did I tell you my old man wrote a song about me?
Your old man wrote a song about you? What was the name of it?
There are such things.
Why don't you shut up, you old slush pup?
Ah, please. Stephen Foster wrote some of America's most beloved folk songs, such as Old Black Joe, Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, Beautiful Dreamer, My Old Kentucky Home. Now, please, who wrote My Old Kentucky Home?
I think you know, Mr. Howard, I heard a nice Irish song today.
Oh, what's that got to do with it?
How does that go now? Da-da-da, let me see.
What was the name of it?
It was, what was the name of it now? Started with an Irish name.
Started with an Irish name? Was it Mike?
Mike? You mean Mike Country, tis of the...
Oh, please. No.
It wasn't Mike.
Was it Riley?
You mean Riley round the flag, boys?
Ah, please, no.
Wait, was it Kelly?
Kelly, yeah, that's it, Kelly. Yeah. California, here I come.
Ah, please, got it. So while Mr. Roberts is getting them in line, we come to our orchestra. An orchestra whose members just blow in their instruments and hope for the best. Dr. Novick mounts the podium, raises his baton, and each member starts playing something different. There they are, Dr. Novick and his orchestra. Music Takes a Holiday, played by Dr. Novick and his mess hall cadets. They are certainly a mess. Who is our first contestant this evening, Mr. Roberts?
Our first contestant tonight, Mr. Howard, is Corporal Joseph Rothenberger of the United States Army.
Oh. Good evening, sir, and welcome to a page bigger. How do you feel this evening?
Oh, very fine, thanks.
That's just dandy. Where is your hometown? Would you care to tell us?
I live in New York City.
Oh, New York City you live. Well, that's swell.
New York City?
Yes.
Well, show me how to get on a train and call me Choo Choo Johnson.
I see.
I used to work in that town.
I thought so.
Yeah, I was a preacher. Preacher in a shoe store.
Yeah?
You were a preacher in a shoe store?
I used to save souls.
Pay no attention to him, Corporal. Never interrupt a bore. He'll think you're listening. How long have you been in the service, Corporal?
Almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years. Congratulations. How do you like it here at Camp Kilmer?
Oh, I like
Never
it.
Mind, don't mention that. Are you married, sir?
No, I'm not.
You're not married.
Hey, you know, Corporal, I was in the last war, yes. Well, I remember one day the sergeant said to me, McNaughton, what's the idea of complaining about army food just because you found a little sand in your spinach? Don't you love your country?
What'd you say?
I said, sure, I love my country, but I don't want to eat it.
Then what did he say?
He said...
Never mind what he said. We're not interested. Look, we have a guest here. As I said before, pay no attention to them, Corporal. I might say we are certainly mighty, mighty... May I ask you what you did before you entered the service?
I was in the music business.
Oh, you were in the music business?
I must make note of that.
Yeah, make note of that, yes. You worked for a music publisher in New York?
No, I was a musician.
Oh, a musician. What instrument did you play?
Drums.
Drums? Oh, I see. You look a little disgusted. Would that be from listening to our orchestra? Would it be? Well, as I said before, it's a pleasure to have you here with us tonight, and I might say you certainly do make a fine-looking soldier.
Yeah, he sure does. Well, what's your first name, honey?
Joseph.
Joseph.
Is that a cute name,
yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
I just love. Isn't he a cute kid too?
Yes, he is.
Never mind. Well, you can just call me Baseball. I got lots of curves.
Yes. And you've been batted around a lot too. Would you do us a favor, Joseph, and reach into the dunce cap that Johnny holds and pick out a question for us? And would you be kind enough to read the question, if you will, please?
How many days are there in a 3-day pass?
Very good. You heard the question, gentlemen. See if you can answer it. How many days are there in a 3-day pass?
You know, that question's going to be hard to get.
Yeah.
So is the pass.
Yeah.
There is a... Mr. Howard, I hate to ask you, but what was the question?
Mr. May, are you paying attention?
Oh, that's an easy question. The answer is no.
I thought so.
What was the question?
The question was, do you suffer from stupidity?
That is not the question. The question is, how many days are there in a 3-day pass?
What 3 days did you have in mind, Mr. Howard?
No, you don't have to name the days. Just give me the answer, the number of the days in a 3-day pass.
In the first place, where are you going to get a 3-day pass?
I see.
Oh, Miss McConnell, that's easy. All you do is go up to your commanding officer and say, pardon me, sir, but I'd like to have a 3-day pass, you see? Mm-hmm. Then he says to you, are you sure 3 days will be enough? You see, and then you say, well, sir, better make it 10 days, you see? Then he says to you, come now. You can't go anywhere in 10 days. Why don't you take a 30-day pass?
Mr. McNaughton. You're just daffy.
Well, I can dream, can't I?
Yeah, I can dream.
But when you wake up, you're going to be awfully disappointed.
You can say that again.
Can I? Oh, thanks. When you wake up, you're going to be awfully...
Oh, wait a minute. Will you please?
She said I could say it.
Never mind, you third-rate morons. Will you shut your mouth? We have a question here. The pass will be up before we answer it. How many days are there in a 3-day pass?
Who do they give the passes to, Mr. Howard?
They give them to servicemen.
Servicemen?
Yes.
You like servicemen, Miss McConnell?
Yeah. What are they going to serve me a couple of?
I see. Miss McConnell, if you ever get a chance to lead your life over again, don't do it, please.
You know, I'm always thinking about soldiers and sailors, except when I'm asleep. I'll have to stop it.
Stop thinking?
No, stop sleeping.
I see. I wish you'd stop breathing.
There's no future in that.
No.
You know, I held my breath for 3 minutes once.
Well, hold it for 30 days. If no one calls for it, it's yours. That's sweet. Like regular musicians. They'll get lost any minute here.
Our next guest this evening, Mr. Howard, is Private First Class Anita Appel of the Women's Army Corps.
Good evening, Miss Appel, and welcome to It Pays Bigger. How do you feel, Miss Appel?
Solid.
Solid. My boy, you certainly do look it.
Boy, I like her. I like her.
I imagine.
Oh, I could go to the end of the world with her.
I see. But would you stay there?
You know, Mr. Howard, I was out with a very unusual girl last night.
You were?
She had two ears.
Wait a minute. Two ears? What's unusual about that?
Oh.
What's the idea? That's nothing unusual for a girl to have two ears, Mr.
Yes, I know, but not on the same side.
Oh. Pay no attention to Miss Appel. Where's your hometown, would you care to tell us?
Manhattan, New York City.
Ah, boy, you seem to be proud of that, too. How long have you been in the service?
Going out about a year.
A year in the service? My, that's marvelous. And you're from New York City? What'd you do before you entered the service? Huh?
A little bit of everything.
Oh, a little bit of everything.
Yes,
you made hash?
No, sir.
Oh, you didn't make hash, I see. Are you married?
No, sir.
Oh, you're not married. You say that as if you really meant it, huh? Are you any relation to Miss McConnell?
No, sir.
I didn't think you were. You have a face.
Yeah, you know, Butch, I think Butch looks just stunning in her uniform.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, how do you like my dress, honey?
Huh? Stunning.
It's funny. Well, I paid $28.14 for it.
14 and a half cents? How'd you get such an odd figure?
I eat too much.
You talk too much, too. In fact, you are too much. Butch, you don't mind me calling you Butch, do you?
That's my name, sir.
That's your name? Good. Well, Butch, would you kindly reach into the dunce cap there and pick out a question for us? And we'd like you to read the question, if you don't mind. Just read it into the microphone there.
Who invented the Morse code?
Well, thank you a lot. Who invented the Morse code? Do you know what a code is, Miss McConnell?
Oh, sure. I got one right now.
You got what?
Yeah, I've been sneezing all day.
I see. I said code.
I know code. I got a code in my nose.
Ain't that
I'm afraid it's going down into my chest.
Say, I know a sure way of keeping the cold from going down in your chest.
How?
Tie a knot in your neck.
Would you kindly cut out the horseplay? Who invented the Morse code?
Morse. Mr. Howard, isn't that one of those animals with the antlers on top of his head?
No. You're thinking of moose.
I am?
Yeah, moose.
Now, why on earth would I be thinking about a moose?
I don't know.
Of all things.
I see.
A moose, that's a fellow belongs to a lodge.
All right. But I'm not talking about a moose.
Mr. Howard, do you mean no moose is good moose?
There we go, into those puns. No, that's terrible.
He means a rolling stone gathers no moose.
That's moss. That's a rolling stone gathers no moss.
Yeah, why?
Why what?
Why doesn't a rolling stone gather no moss?
Mr. McNaught, the next time you buy a new hat, get one with a built-in brain, will you?
Pleasure. What size?
Let's try and answer the question. Who invented the Morse code? Look, answer me this. Who made it possible for news to travel fast?
Oh, my wife.
Your wife. Let's get on here.
I say, you know, Mr. Howard, I'm working on an invention right now.
Yeah, Harry, what is it?
Well, it's got a handle on it like a revolver.
Yeah.
And it's got a trigger on it like a revolver.
Yeah.
It's got a place to put bullets in just like a revolver.
Yeah, what are you going to call it?
A revolver.
What were you going to say, Miss McCollum?
Well, I was just going to say that my old man invented a phonograph to take care of babies.
Yeah.
A phonograph to take care of babies?
Yeah. It has an automatic changer.
Oh, very good.
Hey, you know, I'm somewhat of an inventor myself, Mr. Howard.
You are?
Yeah, you know, I invented dehydrated water.
My word, dehydrated water? Never heard of it.
Oh, that's water with the moisture taken out.
Oh, wait a minute. Water with moisture taken out?
Yeah. Now, look, say you were out on a desert and there's no water.
Yes.
You just take one of my little tablets and drop it in a glass of water, and presto, you'll have a glass of water.
Wait a minute. Why are you going to get a glass of water on the desert in the first place?
Well, if there's no water in the first place, you go to the second place.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Sheldon, you said, old boy, that you're out on a desert with no water, so what good are your dehydrated tablets?
Well, you wait till it rains.
Wait till it rains. If it rains, you have water.
Well, then, in that case, you don't need my dehydrated tablets.
Mr. Sheldon, pardon my southern accent, but you're a sap.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead and laugh. Go ahead. They laughed at old Henry, but he went right ahead and invented the candy bar.
Yeah. Yeah, rather, and it was the nuts.
Beautiful, doesn't it?
record, that's all. Be with us again next week and hear it proven again by Tom Howard, Lulu McConnell, George Shelton, and Harry McNaughton that it pays to be ignorant. Ken Roberts speaking. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Listening to the Golden Age of Radio with It Pays to Be Ignorant, starring Tom Howard, first broadcast on radio on April 27, 1945. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, an episode of The Adventures of Danny Marsden from 1948. But first, Helen Troy and Johnny Patrick star in Cecil and Sally as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Oh, Cecil, stop a minute. Let's look in this window.
Oh, come on, Sally. You don't want a window shop.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
But I do, Cecil. I love to look at things in windows.
Well, what do you want to look at shoes for?
Because they're pretty.
You don't want to look at shoes.
Why do you keep saying I don't want to do things that I do want to do?
Oh, all right. Take a good look.
Oh, Cecil, did you see those people look?
Yeah. What about it?
Did you see them smile?
They weren't smiling at us.
They were, too. Don't you know why?
Why?
They thought we were...
Now, here, don't you say that they think that we're newlywed.
Well, they do, Cecil. Isn't that funny? I can always tell that smile.
Oh, rats. They do not. Why should they?
Because we're looking in windows together.
Come on. Come on. We're not stopping to window shop.
Oh, wait just a minute, Cecil. Oh, isn't that a cute pair of slippers? Oh.
Oh, come on, Sally.
Cecil, don't pull my arm.
Please, Sally. Let's get to where we parked the car.
We have lots of time.
Oh, gosh.
Cecil, what is the price on those slippers over there in the corner of this window?
Can't you see the price card?
No. You're taller than I am. What does it say?
Oh, well, what pair do you mean? That one in the corner? With a bow on it?
No, those there. See them?
I don't know which ones you mean.
Well, I'm pointing at them.
Well, I can't tell what you're pointing at. What color are they?
They're maroon. What does it say on them?
What do you mean, maroon?
I mean maroon. Oh, see, so right in the corner there.
Oh, those?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why didn't you say red? How'd I know what you meant?
Well, will you please see if you can tell the price on them?
It says $8 on the card.
Are you sure?
Oh, of course. I can read.
Oh, I don't think so much of them.
Are you going to get a pair like that?
Oh, no. I just wanted to know how much they were.
Come on, Sally. We've seen all these shoes.
All right. I should think you'd like to look at different things.
Not girls' shoes.
But you should be interested in everything. Cecil, it broadens you.
What do I want to broaden for?
So you'd be a man.
I'd like to know what I am, then.
Well, you act like a baby.
Well, I should get enthusiastic about an old pair of shoes.
You should.
Now, here, don't stop and look in this window, too.
Oh, just for a minute, Cecil. Be nice.
Oh, all right. Take a good look. All right, you've looked. Let's move on.
Oh, Cecil, you're so funny.
I know. I'm killing. Let's go.
Cecil, I haven't even looked at it yet.
Well, don't waste so much time.
Oh, isn't that a sweet dress? Oh, Cecil.
Yeah, it's a honey. Come on.
And look at the one behind it, Cecil. Just look at it.
Huh. Why don't they get intelligent-looking wax models to put these dresses on?
Whoever looks at the dummies anyhow.
Well, I do. You know, if I ever saw a person that looked like that, why, I'd run.
Cecil, do you like that, gathered effect there on the side?
Yeah, it's hot. Come on.
I don't think I like it.
Make up your mind and let's beat it.
Cecil, do you see that black velvet dress?
Yeah.
Do you think that would look nice on me?
Not if you stood the way that thing is posed.
Cecil, quick, let's go.
Wait a minute. Wait, Sally. Look, there's a window dresser. Let's watch him.
Oh, please, let's go.
Oh, I want to watch him fix these models.
Oh, please, Cecil, he's going to undress them.
Well, what of it? They're just wax figures.
I know, but they look awful. Please, Cecil.
Oh, look, Sally. Hey, here, come back here. Wait a minute. Oh, all right, I'll go.
You should be ashamed of yourself, Cecil.
Oh, what a dumb thing to get embarrassed over.
Please, let's let the matter drop.
All right, all right, all right.
There aren't many people on the street tonight, are there?
You're the one that wanted to stop anyhow.
Please, now, let's don't talk about it.
Well, I can't see anything shocking about a wax dummy and BVDs or whatever you call them. Oh, I think they're funny.
Cecil, if you say another word, I'll walk on alone.
If you do, I'll start singing at the top of my voice.
I'll make out like I'm not with you.
I'll follow you anyhow and sing Ramona as loud as I can, and people look at you.
I dare you to.
All right. Ramona, I
oh,
hear
Cecil,
the mission
no.
bells above.
Cecil, please, oh, stop.
Ramona!
Cecil, please, I've never been so humiliated. My goodness, are you crazy?
Well, you dared me to.
Sometimes you're the most impossible person I've ever seen.
Maybe you haven't been around much.
Oh, I don't want to talk to you. I'm mad now.
Fine. Where do we park the car? If you don't answer me, I'll start singing again.
I don't remember.
Well, it's up here someplace. Are you still mad?
Yeah. I'm never going downtown at night with you again.
Oh, what a big storyteller you are. You know you will.
I will not.
You want an ice cream cone?
No.
Oh, how can you resist me?
With the utmost ease.
Ooh, that was a fast one.
Maybe you'll keep still now.
Oh, no. I want to look at some more windows.
No, thanks.
Oh, please.
I'm not interested.
Wait a minute. Look. Here's a men's furnishing store.
Well, what of it?
I want to look at the suits and ties.
No, I won't stop.
Oh, you won't? Would you like to hear me sing again?
All right, then, I'll stop.
Thank you, Sally. Oh, you're so sweet.
You're not welcome.
I keep the change. Oh, Sally, do you like that gray suit in the corner?
No.
You should show some interest. It broadens you. Do you think it would look good on me?
No.
Oh, you don't like gray.
Yes, but I wouldn't like anything on you.
Tut, shame on you, Sally.
Cecil, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Well, you said it. I didn't.
Oh, I wish I were home.
Wait. I haven't seen it all. What do you think of that blue suit? I said, what do you think of that blue suit? Have you ever heard Ramona?
I don't like blue suits.
Oh, that's good. I thought you were deaf for a minute.
I wish I were. Then you could sing your head off for all I care. I'm going to get even with you for this, Mr. Cecil.
Oh, do you think I would look good in a red suit, Sally? I mean, maroon.
Yes, I'd like to see you in one.
Sally, you know, you ought to stay mad all the time.
I intend to, Mr. Cecil. Oh,
you know, the madder you get, the cuter you get, honest. Hey, don't, Sally. Now stop hitting me.
Oh, Cecil, I could kill you.
Help, now let up. I'll be good. Stop. Leave me alone now.
I ought to pull your hair out. I'm so mad because I couldn't stay mad.
All right. We're all set. Let's go home. The car's down this way.
Now, a thought on that summer problem of keeping cool while the thermometer climbs higher and higher. We can't jump in the car and take a drive to cool off. Many of us are spending our vacations right in our own backyard instead of at the seashore or the mountains.
But I found a way to be happy in spite of the heat. After my bath, which I take in lukewarm water, not hot or cold, I put on fresh clothes from top to toe. That's a wonderful feeling. Then the clothes I've been wearing get their bath in gentle Lux suds, so they'll be fresh and sweet when I want them again.
Yes, Lux girls know the charm that daintiness lends. A charm that's easy to have.
It only takes a minute or two to Lux under things. And when you know that everything you wear is fresh and dainty, well, you feel better. And it's so much better for your undies, too, to Lux them after every wearing. They last lots longer when you do.
New improved Lux flakes are super safe, you know. The mildest, gentlest Lux ever made. Super safe for fabrics, super safe for colors. They help pretty underthings wear better, stay new-looking longer. This new Lux comes in the same familiar blue Lux box. But now, it's better than ever before. New improved Lux flakes.
Oh, where is that guy? Hey, Joe!
Does anybody know where Joe is?
A mess.
He wanted in the composing room.
Mess. When Joe comes in, will you see that he gets this note? It's urgent.
Hello? No, Joe's not in the museum. You say it's important. Well, I think he's in Danny Morrison's office. Just a minute, and
I'm Danny Morrison. Yes, that fellow Joe everyone's shouting for was in my office, all right. Well, maybe you're wondering what kind of a Joe he is, since he's so much in demand. The fact is, he's just a kid in his late teens. He's red-headed and still hasn't got rid of the freckles that plagued him all through school. Joe's always on call. There's something about the kid. His blue eyes twinkle, he moves fast, he's smart. The best copy boy we've had around the Mid-City Sentinel in donkey's ages. Well, now that I'm a feature writer, he's decided he's going to carve his niche in the editorial pages someday. And that's why he was in my office. You see, it happened that Joe and I had made a serious bet a few days before.
Hi, Danny. I read your last article. You know, the one on labor management relations? It was great.
Ah, thanks, Joe. Someday you'll write better stuff.
Oh, boy, if I could do half as well, I'd be happy. Danny, I want to work for you. For nothing, in my spare time. You know, help you on your assignments, just so I can learn your style and that sort of thing.
Joe, I haven't any style. I just put one sentence after another. And besides, I'm not covering murder these days. You'd be bored.
Oh, I wouldn't, Danny. Honest, I wouldn't. You know, just because I'm a copy boy now doesn't mean I'm always going to be one. And I read a lot, too. I bet I could help.
Look, my assignment this week isn't exactly exciting. It's pretty solid stuff. You'd be sick of it in 2 days.
What's the assignment?
National unity. Doesn't it thrill you?
Danny, I'll make a bet with you. If you'll let me, I'll follow you around every minute I'm off duty. If I quit, or if you darn well don't admit I've been at least some help, I'll buy you all the cigarettes you can smoke in a week.
Well, what are you going to do with a kid like that? I told Nellie about it, and she said...
You'll lose that bet, Danny. I just know it. Young Joe's a smart kid, and it'll be fun to take him around with us. And I feel sure he'll be useful, too.
Well, Joe trailed us all that week. He was a different kid. He still had the grin in his eyes and the big smile, but there was no more kidding. It was serious business to Joe. I never had to ask him to do anything. He anticipated every job, and he went at it with a will. Well, finally, I had the assignment pretty well doped out of my mind. And when I came down to work on it Friday morning, Joe opened the door to my office.
Hiya, Danny. I've been waiting for you.
Well, I won't need you today, kid. Why don't you sneak off and see a show? You've earned it. I'm going to put the story together anyway.
I know. That's why I'm here. It's going to be a whiz, too.
How do you know? I'm not so confident myself.
Well, I've been reading your notes.
If you can make anything from that doodling of mine, kid.
But I can. It's just as though you'd written it all.
looked at my notes, along with the doodling, I'd written the very sketchiest of headings. Just random ideas. Things that meant Canada and Canadian unity to me. But what they'd mean to a kid like Joe, I couldn't guess. But I was curious to find out. So I handed Joe the list and I told him to tell me what he made of it.
Well, the first thing you've written is hockey broadcast. That's to set the scene. Fellas listening in at Regina and fellas listening at St. John at the same time and hopping up and down when Foster Hewitt shouts, "He shoots! He scores!" That kind of makes us all one nation.
Go on.
The next note says planes roaring. I guess you'll write about guys like Wap May and other bush pilots. I wrote for a picture of Wap May when I was a kid in grade 6. I still have it, too, Danny. I guess he and flyers like him were heroes to kids all over Canada, and they wanted to fly, too. And lots of them flew bombers and fighter planes, too, to keep us free so there'd be a Canada to be unified.
Uh-huh. They did it that, Joe. They sure did.
I'm not so sure about the next two, fishing boat and power drill. I guess you'll write about how we've got lots of natural resources and we need to develop them, and that's sort of a problem for all of us to solve, like we all fought together to win the war. Or you might be meaning that the same kind of guys are behind those drills as there are working the fishing boats, and they shouldn't be against each other, but for each other. They're all Canadians, after all.
Well, keep talking, kid.
This one, the Massey Commission. I looked it up. They're studying arts, letters, and science. And you'll probably say that that's a sign that we're developing things of our own, like Canadian books and Canadian music and so on. And this note about two women at a country fair, I take that to mean that you're...
Well, young Joe went right through those notes of mine. And for my money, his observations were pretty sound. I saw folks in their Canadian homes listening to the hockey broadcast on a Saturday night. And it occurred to me that Joe was so right about it, linking us together. And I could visualize kids on corner lot rinks and on the ponds right across the country, competing, all in the rough and tumble of the game, taking their wins and losses well. Well, perhaps hockey helps to give Canadians that set of the shoulders, that swing in their walk that makes them recognizable wherever they go. And I could see the plains manned by young fellows who had faith in the North and its future. And when war came, fellows like them got together and fought together with faith. Faith in their country and what it stood for. And they're the kind of men who still have faith in their country and the Canadian way of life. Now, demagogues and crackpots may try to sell them off it, but there's nothing fuzzy-minded about Canadians. Well, they've learned how team play counts in games and in war, and they'll not be easily fooled into attempts to set labor against management and east against west. And I like what Joe said about the men behind the power drills and the men who man the fishing boats. I could see the men in my mind's eye, tough-muscled and tough-minded. They know by experience, they know in their bones that it takes brains and muscle to create wealth, to build, to mine, and to fish. Now, governments can create the atmosphere for such enterprises, but governments cannot create wealth by passing laws or issuing orders in council. There's a pool of common sense and hard-won knowledge possessed by these men from coast to coast that makes a team. I remember the production records in war. The whole world talked of them. And I thought, oh, how rich this land would be if we could, as we will, I firmly believe, hold those records and extend them. And I remember, too, that these men and women with lunch pails have customers, important customers on the farms. The Canadian farmer looks to the factory worker to produce machines he can afford to buy, just as factory worker looks to the farmer for eggs, meat, beef, and bacon that his wages will pay for. And as long as both parties remember their joint dependency, Canadian unity is in no danger on that score. Well, not that Canadians are all alike. They're individuals. For in Canadian democracy, unity doesn't mean uniformity. In the broad framework of Canadian freedom, a great variety of cultures, languages, and traditions make this contribution to our heritage. In the United Nations and other world councils, our delegates are listened to with respect, for Canada's voice carries weight. When Joe came to the point in my notes about Canadian Chamber of Commerce, I expected he'd bog down. Not Joe. He'd been doing some research on his own, and he pulled a sheet of paper from his pocket.
Here's what I've written about the Chamber of Commerce and National Unity, Danny. I swapped up on it last night. Mr. Smith, the secretary of the Mid-City Chamber of Commerce, is a friend of Dad's, so he gave me the material I needed to write it.
Well, go ahead. Let's hear it, Joe.
The Mid-City Chamber of Commerce had its beginning much like the old guilds in English towns began. A group of local businessmen getting together to discuss community problems and to do all they can to make Mid-City a prosperous town where business is good and where people would like to live and work. It is a purely voluntary and democratic organization. In towns and cities from Halifax to Vancouver, businessmen did the same thing. In fact, the first group of the kind was formed at Halifax in the year 1750, and it was called the Association for the Benefit of Trade. Over the years, Canadian towns and cities grew more and more aware of the fact that their destinies were tied up with the whole of Canada. In 1925, representatives of more than 60 chambers, or boards of trade as they're sometimes called, sent representatives to Winnipeg, and there they organized the Dominion Board of Trade. It's now known as the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. The Canadian Chamber of Commerce is truly a unifying force in Canada.
Yeah, that's good stuff, Joe. We all know that the Mid-City Chamber of Commerce does lots of good work here in town. They ran that get-out-and-vote campaign, the tourist promotion, and lots of other things. But not many people realize that they're part of a nationwide movement.
I've lots more material here, Danny, if you can use it. They've a National Affairs Committee in nearly every town, too. That helps bring a better understanding of national problems to businessmen everywhere.
Thanks, Joe. I'll be able to use that material.
Hey, you two. What are you up to in here? Everybody's looking for Joe.
Oh, Nellie, I'm glad you came in. Have you got that envelope with you? The one with Joe's name on it?
I sure have. I've been looking all over for him so I could let him have it. Here you are, Joe.
Open it, Joe.
Are you fellas pulling a gag on me?
Go on, read it.
Holy Dinah. Oh, gee, Danny. Gee, you're 100%.
I'll count Nellie in, too. She insisted on kicking in on some of the dough, you know.
Oh, thanks, Miss McCoy. This is great. Gee, I've been wanting to take a course in journalism ever since I can remember, and...
Well, there you are. But you can't sit here gabbing all day. The chief wants you.
You mean the boss, the managing editor, he wants me?
Yep.
Wonder what he could want me for.
Get going, Joe. The chief wants you to meet the new copy boy. Starting today, you're the Mid-City Sentinel's new cub reporter.
Oh, mama. Holy smoke. Gee, let me out of here quick.
Well, Nellie, as Fibber McGee would say, there goes a good kid.
Yes. And as Nellie McCoy would say, there goes a kid that knew how to pick out the right man, by which I mean none other than the Mid-City Sentinel ace reporter, Danny Marson.
Hey, you quit kidding.
I'm not kidding, Danny. If there were more guys like you, ready and willing to give a helping hand wherever and whenever it's deserved, more guys who give the other fellow a break, whether he's rich or poor, national unity wouldn't need essays written about it. And that's gospel, Danny. You can take it from Nellie McCoy.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of Cecil and Sally and the Adventures of Danny Marsden, first broadcast on radio on November 18, 1948. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s, material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.